Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Listening to Team Station, where we always have something to say. And tonight, we're going to speak about the essential ingredients of sound and what you can hear. Sound familiar, anyone? Well, I know those sound effects weren't as scary as our guests we're going to have right soon, but I know all of our listeners are so ready, and our real sound is going to be coming up soon. And this is how the vivid picture our new guest is going to bring. And I would like to present our new teen host for this evening, Ashley Schwartz.
Hi, everyone. So I'm Ashley Schwartz. I'm from New York, and I will be hosting Teen Station today. I just want to take the time to thank Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul, for hosting our show, and no more time to waste. Let's just get started. So today we have the lovely Tassini.
Hi.
Then we have Miranda hailing from Maryland.
Hello.
We have the lovely Kendall.
Hi.
And then we have our honored guest, Mr. Greg Hedgepath.
Hello from Los Angeles.
From Los Angeles. Now, Greg Hedgepath, he is a sound editor. He has worked on, I can't even list to you guys how many films he's worked on for such a long period of time. He has a career spanning over 25 years, and some of his most identifiable work is Hunger Games. We're talking Rollbound, Aquila and the Bee, Speed, just to name some of the things he has under his belt. So welcome, Greg. We're so happy to have you.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Yay,
and an honor.
It's exciting. Okay, so we're going to start off our show with the Oscars, because we like to talk about current events here, Greg.
Sure.
So why don't we start off with you, since you're new to our show. What did you think of this year's Oscars?
Pretty broad question, but I would say that, you know, as far as the show goes, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of the show. People talk about it being, you know, it's the longest show that they've had so far. I think, you know, it'd be nice to see them kind of step it up a little bit and make it a little bit more current, make some of the bits funnier. But, you know, all in all, I was entertained. You know, I've seen some where it just seemed to drag on, and some of the bits between the hosts weren't that funny. I think this was a little better. I thought Seth MacFarlane, you know, some of his stuff was funny, some was not. And I was watching it with my 17-year-old, so she's a teen. And, you know, a few of the bits were a little uncomfortable, but she's a pretty wise young lady. So, you know, we weren't worried about anything shocking or anything. But, you know, I think you can be funny without having to be crass consistently like that. Once in a while, some of those jokes are going to come in, but you know, some of that was a little too much. much. But overall, you know, I thought it was okay. You know, I thought it was okay, not great.
Okay. Does anyone want to jump on what Greg is saying, or does anyone want to agree or disagree? How about you, Tassine? What do you think of the Oscars overall?
I mainly heard about Jennifer Lawrence falling when she went
to get her Oscar.
I didn't see it. Except after I went on YouTube and I watched that. But yeah, that's the highlight of the Oscars for me. You worked in Hunger Games, right?
Yeah, I did. I did the portion of it that I did is I did the ambiences and the environments for the whole world, whether it was the planet they were on or the high tech control room that they had or the various locations. So I kind of created the sounds for those various worlds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have to visit the places in order to make the sound?
No, I mean, because what we do in sound is kind of we create worlds and sounds basically out of nothing. I mean, we do have libraries of sound effects. For example, I work at a company in Hollywood called Sound Deluxe, and it's the largest independent sound company probably in the world. Excuse me while I cough. There are other independent companies. This is probably the largest one. I think their sound library is probably something like maybe 20 terabytes of sound effects. You know, I have my own sound effects library that's probably about, you know, 5 terabytes that I have that are totally different sounds that I use. So we have enough material that we can pull to create different sounds. Like, did most or some of you see Hunger Games?
I never saw it.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, there are various scenes, but there's a scene where Katniss is looking for her boyfriend, and she's walking across this, it's kind of like a shallow river. And from talking to the director, he could have played it two ways. It could have been one continuous scene, because it was kind of shot continuously. He did some jump cuts, meaning they would cut in time to kind of shorten segments up. It could have been one continuous time where all the sounds kind of would have flowed together, or it could have jumped from cut to cut. And he wanted it to jump so that it would show that there was a change in time. In other words, it was taking her longer to find her boyfriend than just walking down the river. So I had to make each cut sound somewhat different, but I had to have kind of a common thread between them. And so as the camera panned and turned, like if there was a waterfall, I would put the waterfall in and pan it around from left to right to the surrounds, and the water would trickle and it would move around. And there's a lot of intricate stuff that I would do that when you go and see the movie, you have no idea it's being done. It just seems like, they mounted a microphone on the camera, and when they move the camera around, the sound moves. But in truth, when they shoot those scenes, they usually a scene like that, because she's not speaking, they don't record any sound at all. So the only time they record sound usually is when an actor is speaking. If they're driving a car, shooting a gun, they don't usually record anything for that because they don't need it.
That's a really cool tidbit. And it's interesting to know that, because especially expecting you as a guest and knowing you were going to come, I really paid attention to the sound category at the Oscars this year. And it's so exciting to have you on to really understand how that played a role in some of the best pictures. Because a lot of them were extremely dynamic movies. A lot of them had action scenes. And we don't realize the big part that sound plays in that. So I want to pose a question to Kendall. What did you think about Argo receiving Best Picture?
I didn't see the movie.
But my sister
did, and she was really excited that they won, because she really loved it. She recommended that I see it with her. So I think that, I don't know, I'm like more of a fan of whichever movie I like the best wins, because I like to see the movies that I like succeed. Like,
of course.
Have you guys seen Silver Linings Playbook?
No.
No.
It was a movie with Jennifer Lawrence that she won an award for, and it was so good. So I'm really glad she won for that movie.
And I have to admit, I haven't seen it, and my wife tells me we have to see it this weekend.
It's so good.
Waiting for it to go on DVD. I don't know about you all, but am I the only person where there's some movies you have to watch in film, especially because of the sound effects, you have to feel it booming in a theater, And then there are other movies that, you know, you can wait until it goes on DVD and you feel like you'd get the same effect. Are you like that, Miranda, or is it just me?
Yeah, well, definitely for more, I guess, action-based movies or movies which are more of, I guess, marketed as like a spectacle, you kind of get excited to go and specifically see it in a movie theater. And there's definitely that thrill of, you know, hearing all the sounds there and all the special effects inside a movie theater.
Can I jump in here for a second and say something about bootlegs?
Okay.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, buy bootlegs when films come out or before they officially come out, they'll get a bootleg. And the thing I was going to say about it is it really hurts people like me and especially African-Americans in particular in the film business. And the reason is that studios nowadays, since the economic crash that we kind of went through, studios are allocating less money to make films. And what's happening in Hollywood is if you notice, at one point, before the crash, there were more African-American-centric films. Now there are fewer. I mean, there are people like Tyler Perry, who's always going to crank out films, and a few other people. But there are fewer of them because they've decided we have this smaller pot of money that we're going to be spending, so why should we spend money on African-American films where we can put it into general films? Black people are going to go anyway. And part of the reason is because African-American movies get bootlegged and are bought on bootleg far more than any other genre of film. And part of that is economic because, you know, a lot of it is, you know, okay, we don't have enough money to go to the movies, so people say, hey, I'm just going to get that bootleg. The studios have enough money. But what it does is it makes the studios go, okay, we know we're going to lose a certain amount of revenue or people aren't going to go to these movies, so we won't spend as much. So, for example, the films that are being made now, at one point, it wouldn't be unusual for a studio to spend, say, $15, maybe $20 million on an African American film. Now they're spending between $2 and $5 million.
Wow.
So, yeah, big difference. Huge difference.
That is huge.
And $5 million is kind of the top. I mean, that's kind of these days, and then this has happened in a short period of time, over maybe 3 years. $5 million is kind of the top, and a lot of them are like $1 and $2 million. I mean, you'd be surprised how cheap these movies are, and a lot of them are so low that because I work for a union facility and our wages are a little higher, I can't do them. So it's kind of tough. And, for example, I'll give you an example. I worked on Hustle and Flow.
Yeah.
And I supervised that. And the bootleg thing had been going on for a while. But I went to a local place, a little soul food place, to get some food. And there was this guy out there selling DVDs out of his truck. And I saw the film out there. We hadn't finished it yet. I bought a copy to show to somebody, and somebody there said, yeah, we're trying to get on this. You know, if you see anybody, call this number. They gave me a number. There's a division of the police department that's set up to kind of find people. So for the first time, I decided I'm going to rat this dude out. This dude is taking money off my table. He's hurting black people, and there are other people. And it turned out that what had happened is somebody had gotten a copy of the movie, like a high-quality copy of a mix that we had done. We do things called temp mixes. You know, when you go to a theater and they say you want to see this movie and see it before it comes out and give it a score. I don't know if they do that out there, but out here we do that. So we do a special mix for that. So it's a pretty high-quality mix. So this guy had a high-quality copy of it. It wasn't just recorded with a camera in the back of the theater.
Okay.
And so they could sell these. They were selling them like crazy. So I went back, I told the dude, I said, look, dude, you should stop selling these. You know, I work in the business, and he just kind of blew me off. So I called the cops on him. They came, they got the guy. He had 25,000 copies of the movie, just this one guy. Then he turned them on to the guy. They had just hundreds of thousands of copies of this one movie in a warehouse in L.A., and it was being distributed all over the country. So there were copies in New York, in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as a result, Hustle and Flow didn't make a lot of money, even though it was a popular
just because of that ring of people?
Well, it was a part of it. I mean, it was a good movie, and the song, the theme song, won an Academy Award.
Yeah.
But black people didn't go and see it because they couldn't. And I talked to a guy who was living kind of in a central part of the city. He said he was just walking his dog down the street when the DVDs first came out, the bootlegs. He said just about every house on his block was playing the movie when he was walking down the street. That was just one block.
Oh my God.
So
wow.
I say all that to say that people think, well, you know, buying this one DVD isn't gonna hurt. It hurts a lot because it's hurting us. You know, it's hurting black people.
Well, there's good news for you, actually, because getting back on the subject of current events, in the news recently, I don't know if the rest of you guys have heard. If you have, please, you know, feel free to chime in. They are, now that you noticed that, it's kind of, that was 2005, so, or 2004, depending on when you guys were working on it. Now they have people, you know, downloading movies illegally from online.
Yeah.
So the government has teamed up with internet service providers. And they're tracking basically everybody who has internet. They're tracking their downloading behavior and their habits. And if you are constantly downloading not only movies but music and, you know, pictures, anything, you'll get a warning. You get 6 warnings to cease and desist. And then after that 6 warning, your internet service is slowed down to a crawl until they see fit. So they are really cracking down on downloading and, you know, that could mean really good news for, you know, the movie industry and putting money back in that. Because I know, you know, the job pool is diminishing for film and sound and media in general.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking to a producer once when I was working on years ago on a film with John Singleton. And I was telling him, you know, that he had a cast of actors. I said, man, everybody in this film is great. He said, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches. That's what, how he put it. He said, when I cast a movie for African Americans, because there's so many talented people and there's so few slots that I just have my pick of the best people. So now that pool has gotten smaller. The pool of jobs has gotten smaller for those people. So hopefully, you know, I heard about this new law that came into effect. A friend of mine just told me about it today. I didn't read about it. So hopefully that does something to help people, because it'll mean more opportunities for many of you if the job market does open up.
Now, that sounds really great to you, but here at Teen Station, where our, you know, audience are teenagers who frequently download, who don't want to spend 99 cents a crack for an iTunes, you know, song, or, you know, don't want to pay to see a movie online. Mm. How do, you know, the teens feel about having now to jeopardize, let's say, their parents' internet if they keep up their downloading, you know, habits? How do you feel about that, Kendall?
Well, in my household, I remember I was probably 13 when I first tried to illegally download a song. And my parents.
Thanks for your honesty.
What'd you say?
I said thanks for your honesty, by the way. Admitting that out loud.
And my parents caught me, and my dad was really annoyed because, you know, he explained to my sister and I, if you're taking away from people's living costs, it's not like just besides you breaking the law, you're taking away from people's living costs by doing this. So my sister and I are just, we don't do it. Like, all my songs are purchased, and sometimes my friends are like, hi, Kendall, I can't believe that, you know, you pay $1.29 for this song when you can just get it for free. So, I don't know, at this point it's become like a conscience thing, because I just remember that. Kind of like what you said earlier about, you know, buying your movie off the street and how that's taken away from your money. So that's just how I think about it.
Yeah, you could go and tell your dad now that you have a real-life industry person telling you, confirming, yes, this takes food from my family.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so interesting. How about you guys? You know, how about you, Miranda and Tassine? Miranda, start.
Well, when I was younger, one of my first experiences with buying music was one of my so-called friends actually got my iTunes account and bought over $100 of stuff from it. So,
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah, I've always been really careful with that stuff now, especially just because that kind of happened to me, but not really. But, you know, so I know the experience of people kind of stealing from you. So I've always been kind of careful, you know, never to buy illegally. But I definitely know a lot of people who do buy illegally. And I think it'll definitely, if this, you know, when this gets into effect, I think it'll definitely take a big toll on their spending habits.
Yeah, that's totally true. And then you, Tassine, again, I'll just reiterate, like, how do you feel about now the internet service providers cracking down on illegal downloading and having to pay? I'm sure you feel a little differently about this, considering you really are a film person.
Originally, I thought that it was, I was kind of upset that, you know, they're like cracking down on everything. So it's like, oh man, now I actually have to pay for things. But that's because I didn't have a job, and my parents would be like, no, you can't really watch movies if you have to pay for it, or listen to music if you have to pay for it. So illegally downloading things were the only way to be part of society, because everyone else had like music on their phones and movies on their laptops and Netflix, and I was like, I don't have any of that. But now that I know more, that it's actually illegal, how many people it's hurting, the actors, the producers, the directors, it's hurting so many people that are involved, taking money out of the industry, and we don't realize how much it affects people. Well, I didn't realize until, you know, people told me. I was like, wow,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
You totally gain a different perspective on it once you hear people's stories. Like, I'm a broadcast journalism major, and I'm not going to lie. I'll put it out there. My name is Ashley Schwartz, and I hate to pay for things. I hate it. And when I was in high school, like, honestly, I would not have the collection of music I have if I did not illegally download. Like, anybody, I swear, anybody who has, like, 10,000 songs on their iPod Classic has an illegal downloading problem. I think we all know. No normal person could afford 10,000 songs at 99 to 129 a pop. So, there's that. And I was an avid downloader. And then in my media class, I have a professor who I'll give a shout out, my professor Dumpty. He's awesome. And he really took the time to let us know, like, this takes money out of people's pockets. Like, he spent lectures on why downloading is wrong and why, especially if you're trying to enter this business, why you should not do it. So if there are any teenagers out there in high school who are like, I want to be a filmer, I want to be a writer, I want to be a composer, and you download music, really think about the fact that you're harming your own self and you're harming your industry, and it'll totally change your perspective on it. Like, I don't know how I feel about having to pay, I'm not going to lie, but it's really, you know, I'm not going to lie, but I know that if I illegally download, I'm part of the problem. So now that we're on this whole
topic, I can't wait to listen to our great questions that we're going to have for our guests.
Yes, we're going to get on it. So, Mr. Hedgepath, or Greg, if you prefer to be called that, have had a wonderful career spanning, you know, over 25 years. And I think
I've been very blessed.
Yeah. Yes, you really have been. And you've made such great films, but one of the angles on this that I was personally interested in is how technology has changed over the course of your career. When you began, I'm sure you were not editing sound on computers.
No, not at all.
So I was wondering, especially for the teens, because, you know, teens don't remember the times of, you know, having to manually do things. Can you explain to us the timeline and the technologies that have carried you through your career from inception to present? Why don't we start from, like, speed?
Okay, well, can I start a little before that?
Sure,
I mean, I can sort of incorporate my career arc with it, just with the idea that it may help somebody, you know, as you're looking for jobs and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I started in radio, TV, and film at the University of Maryland. This was back, I think I was class of, 77, so that, you know, shows you how long ago that was. And back then, in radio, we were doing all of our sound on quarter-inch tape. And so I went on to work at a radio station, then came back to D.C. and worked for National Public Radio for about 6 years. And back then, everything was tape-based, quarter-inch based, and all our editing was done with a razor blade. It was really pretty archaic when you look back on it. And then I got a job through a friend of mine, somebody who I'd mentored at NPR, got a job working at Lucasfilm for George Lucas.
Okay.
And I got a job through her working there. And just to show you how I got the job, what happened was she happened to call work one day. I hit her up. I said, hey, do they have any jobs there? She said, well, I was calling to offer a job to this other guy who wasn't there that day. I said, well, look, her name was Dawn. I said, Dawn, you know, you remember I mentored you and we did all this and, you know, I helped your career. You know, how about turning me on to a job? So she told me about the job, which was an entry-level position. So what I did was I quit my job. Well, what I did is I fired off a resume to the company the very next day, to Lucasfilm, and I said, look, if you guys will just see me, I will fly myself out there from Washington to California. I think the ticket was like $800 round trip, which was a lot of money back then.
Wow, that is still a lot of money.
Still a lot of money, yeah. It was even more money back then. It was probably triple the money, considering.
Yeah.
And so I decided to just go out there, have them see me, and they toured me around the place, let me meet a bunch of the people, and then after a day I came back, and what they did is they decided amongst themselves if I would fit into the company, which they said I did, and then so 2 weeks later, I had quit my job at NPR, and I was one of the top mixers there, and I left there to be an entry-level person at Lucasfilm with a salary reduction, sold off a bunch of my stuff, and went from living in an apartment to a room in a house just to get this job. But it was a great investment because I was young, and I didn't have a family, so I could just jettison everything, move out to California, and then the job was only guaranteed for 6 months, but I was willing to take the risk. If they're going to take a risk on me, I'd take one on them. And they said the fact that I was just so willing to get up, leave, you know, fly out there, see them, just drop everything, you know, they said they had to hire me because they wanted somebody who was had that kind of fire in their belly to work for them. So it worked out. So I worked there 6 years, learned a lot. It was like going to a PhD course in sound. It was the perfect thing at the perfect time for me. And so, but it got to the point where I would drive onto George Lucas has this facility on this fantastic ranch. I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of it, Skywalker Ranch. It's like driving onto Disneyland every day. Yeah, I could go on and give lectures about that for a whole day. But anyway, so it got to a point where I realized, well, I'm still making low money. I could make more money in L.A. I want to be able to buy my own place someday. So I ended up leaving that job and moving down to L.A. So during my time at Lucasfilm, they went from being tape-based to being based on synthesizers. The sound was on synthesizers and computers. And they actually developed one of the first computer editing systems.
Not to cut you off, Greg, but what year would you say
that
was
probably... That's probably about, you know, between 83 and 86 they made that transition, I think.
Oh, not bad, actually.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but it was the very beginning days of computers, and the computers were very slow by our standards, and they took up, you know, their first editing system took up a huge room and had to be really cooled down. I'd have to put on a coat to go in there. And
really?
So,
that's so weird.
So I had these huge, you know, like a 20 meg hard drive was this huge disk pack that you need two hands to lift up and put down in this machine and lock it in. And you couldn't touch it. If a spark touched it, it would ruin the whole thing. And now we throw hard drives around like nothing. We don't think about it.
Yeah.
But that's how it was back then. So came down to L.A., worked at various companies. Finally, Pro Tools started coming into being. And I kind of saw the handwriting on the wall because people were buying, there were a lot of different editing systems back then, digital editing systems, but I realized that musicians were editing on Pro Tools, so they had a big user base, so I decided to buy one, and I had been laid off, but I had $6,000 in savings, so I spent $3,000 of it and bought a Pro Tools system, and ended up getting work on a movie about... It was about tornadoes. It was like a guy had done this black and white movie about tornadoes, but that led to me working with a guy who later did Twister. He knew he was going to
do Twister. Wow, you see that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I did all the tornadoes in Twister. I did all the tornado sounds. But he actually got me on Speed before Twister, so I did a bunch of work on Speed, did some other things, did Blade in the interim, and did some editing, and then did sound design on Twister. And then
technologies did you do the sounds on Speed and Twister?
On Speed, that was with my first Pro Tools system. It was with I had a 1 gigabyte hard drive that I paid $3,100 for. For 1 gigabyte. Now you can get that on a little stick you can carry around. And
yes.
I just thought I thought I was something back then with a 1 gig hard drive. And I think my computer was 20 megahertz. I had to speed it up to 50 megahertz, and it still choked all the time. I only had 4 tracks I could work with. So I did a bunch of I'd have to work with 4 tracks, dump it off to multi-track tape, work with the next 4, dump it off. And the part in Speed, if any of you have seen that, it's kind of an old movie for you guys, but there's a part where Keanu Reeves goes down in this subway tunnel. He finds that the bad guys escaped through he moves his trash can on the street aside, sees this hole in the ground, mm-hmm. goes underground to the subway system. And from that point on where he goes underground, I did all the effects, all the backgrounds and the subway and all the stuff that happens there. And I did that with just four channels at a time, and I think I ended up having maybe 24 channels. So I'd have to keep the part that I just did in my head while I was editing the next part. So that's kind
wow.
of like working with, you know, I don't know, bows and arrows compared to what we have now, because I'm sitting in front of my editing system in my room right now, and I can probably play easily 256 tracks off of one hard drive. You know, we don't even think about it. Whereas back then, you know, I'd play four tracks and my system would start choking. So,
but that's,
you know,
a good and bad thing, because now with a system doing half your work, doesn't that leave less opportunities for specialists, let's just say?
No,
you know,
not at all.
Oh,
no,
wow.
No, I mean, when you say system doing your work, I mean, what it does is it gives you more options, but it's
okay.
still hard, because what it means is I could put up 256 tracks of crap. And sometimes what I also do is, right now I'm a sound supervisor, so I also do sound editing. That's how I started, but now I've, you know, years ago I graduated to the position of supervisor, so I'm in charge of the entire sound of whatever movie I'm working on. I hire the crew, and I'm in charge of the mix, and work with the composer and the mix. So sometimes I get editors who are new, and they'll try to do an explosion, for example. I worked on a movie called Skyline. And the movie was a low-budget film, so I had to get people who weren't as experienced because I couldn't pay them as much. And there was this scene where they dropped this nuclear bomb trying to blow up the aliens, and this guy was supposed to do the explosion, and it just sounded like... this long, cheesy sound effect. And I said, dude, there's no personality in the explosion. It doesn't, you know, rise and fall, and it doesn't, you know, morph and change. And, you know, as it moves
wow.
across the L.A. basin, you're supposed to hear it kind of build and then crescendo, you know, because it's really like designing a symphony when you're doing these sounds.
Yeah.
And he didn't get it. So what I did is I used maybe a third the tracks that he did and really shaped it. And then as he was watching me, I could hear him go, wow, oh, I see. And he got it. But it takes a while to really learn how to shape sound and really make a soundtrack live. And even though you have more tracks to do it with, you have to know which sounds to use, because if you just layer two bad sounds together, it sounds like even worse than just one bad sound. It just gets muddier and worse and worse. So, you know, it gives you a lot of options. It makes some things easier, but it makes some things harder too.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know that Miranda has been dying to ask you a question since we found out you were coming on. So, Miranda, go ahead. What was your question for Mr. Hedgepath?
Well, you've obviously worked on a lot of movies which are really great and some of my personal favorites. But
oh, cool.
I was just wondering, from your whole career, which film did you enjoy the most working on, as well as which film was the biggest challenge to work on?
Oh boy, that's a tough one, because I have a lot of favorites, and quite often my most favorite one is the one I just finished, because, you know, it's fresh in my mind. And the other thing is, I find that, you know, I'm 58 years old. And
be proud, yes.
No, I'm very proud of it. And the weird
yes.
thing is that I keep getting better and better at what I'm doing, not just editing, but supervising people, dealing with clients. So I'm learning more and more with each film I do. So, for example, I just did a film called it started out being called Jezebel. If you look it up on IMDb, that stands for Internet Movie Database. That's kind of the Bible that we use for credits. But it's now called Ghosts. So
So
if you look on IMDb, it'll be called Jezebel/Ghosts, because it doesn't come out till January of 2014, so the name may change again. But I think it's some of my best work, because it's a horror movie. It's not a gory horror movie, but there's a lot of tension in it. And the director wrote me a really nice thank you email at the end, and he told me that my crew and myself really brought the movie up to another level exponentially just through the sound, because there were scenes that I would see them, like there's a dream scene, in the second reel where we kind of float into this room. The door opens and we dolly into this room. It feels like we're floating. And we see this girl across the room on a gurney, and we dolly up to her. And then these two, this her mother kind of walks around and brushes her hair. Then these two orderlies come and strap her in. Then they push her through the room. She goes in this other room where she actually sees herself on this table having a voodoo ceremony performed on her, and then they wheel her into this other room where she sees this guy who turns around. It turns out he's burned, and he's doing this writing with sand on the floor. But the way it was shot, it didn't look exactly scary. It was kind of dark and a little green tinted, but it didn't have a lot of smoke or nobody looked ghostly, and these were all supposed to be dead people. So I had to figure out a way to make this sound like it was otherworldly and like it was a dream. So I just did a whole lot of stuff. I mean, I used African chants. I went to a music store, African music store, and got a bunch of shaker arrays, different sounds, and then processed them, recorded the shakers in my room, and then reverbed them and played the reverb backwards. And there are all these sounds that kind of build up to the point where they buckle her in, they're building and building, and then they close the buckle, and you hear this ka-chunk, 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 and it gets rhythmic, and then it gets a little duller, and then you start to hear this, and it's African chanting that comes out of that, and then that transitions to something else and to other sounds. So that's something that I probably wouldn't have done, say, 2 years ago. I wouldn't have thought of that. So I'm giving you a long answer. But to answer your question, so that's one of my best films, I think. But other ones have been, I like the creatures I did for Starship Troopers. It takes place on another planet, and there are all these bugs. They call them bugs, but they're probably three stories tall. And I did the sounds or the voices for those bugs. I like that. I like the tornado work in Twister. I'm really proud of Blade because I did that years ago when I was still relatively new at it, but I think the soundtrack still holds together, and I think the first Blade is still the best one. And there are other ones. I mean, Too Fast, Too Furious, I loved all the car work we did in that. And I got to go down to Florida and record a bunch of cars and drive cars that I probably never would have been able to touch in my life, you know, some classic ones. And
priceless cars. Like what?
There was a 69 Yanko Camaro there. They only made a few of these things, and it was like this special car, and got to drive it. And I said, I'm worried about flipping this thing over. And the guy said, it's insured. Don't worry about it. Okay. Dodge Viper. They had the 300Z before they had even come out. So I got to drive that. And I wanted one of those really badly. I had to stop myself from trying to buy one. Honda had something 2000. It's a two-seater sports car that's mostly motor. A bunch of different cars. Just had a good time. So I have a lot of favorites. And mostly, and you hear the way I describe it, a lot of the times it's parts of various movies also. I mean, I did a movie that wasn't very good called Punisher Warzone, but there's a lot of guns in the movie, and I'm really proud of the gun work, believe it or not. I know we're in I'm not a big gun nut, but especially in the environment we're in right now. But the sound of the guns is really good, I got to say. Yeah, so I don't know. Did I answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the most challenging?
Oh, most challenging. Well, I would say probably that Punisher movie was the most challenging because I was doing that when the budgets were starting to get smaller, so I didn't have much of a crew, so I guess I had to cut about 90% of the sound effects myself. That was challenging because I had to do so much work. Another challenging one I would say was Footloose.
That's so cool.
Yeah, because I did that, and there were so many different things going on in that movie. There's a bus race where we had these three diesel buses, and we had to recreate that. There was a stock car race. There was a scene where they let me see, there was a lot of dancing, a lot of different music, the scene where they play chicken with a train on a railroad track, and the train seems to come down the track for a long time, so I had to make it interesting, and it had to build throughout the scene. And there's just a lot of things we had to do. For example, with the dancing scenes, anytime you hear the people dancing, it's all something called Foley. And Foley is where we use Foley where we go in and we recreate any kind of movement, like whether it's hand pats, touching something, picking up a glass or drinking a glass, something, or footsteps, that sort of thing. Because when they record the sound on the set, they intentionally try not to record that stuff. All they want to record is the voices, so we have to recreate.
Yeah.
And so for Footloose, we brought in a dance floor in the Foley stage. I had them set it up, and I had them set it up upside down because I'd read an article years ago that if you assemble it upside down and have people dance on it, it actually is noisier, and we wanted it to be noisier and a little creakier. So you know, there were challenges like that and many more in that movie. So that was one of the harder ones.
So, Greg, we have Tassine, who is like our film girl. She's been working on videos since I knew her in high school. So she's the one that's probably brimming with the most questions. And so I want to get back on Hunger Games because it's one of your most current works. It's very identifiable with our teen audience.
Sure.
So Tassine, what was your question about Hunger Games again?
Oh, I was going to ask, do you guys record the sound of the people's voices after? Do you guys do voiceovers, or do you guys just take the sound of the actors then and there?
We do both. We take the sound, we record the sound of the actors on set, or if they're outside, obviously, we record them outside. And we use either what's called a lav, which is usually a radio mic that's on their body, and we also use a boom mic. Usually each actor will have their own separate lav, and then each actor's voice is recorded on a separate track, and the boom mic is a mic that's suspended over them. We record them with that, but then sometimes you're just in an environment that's just too noisy, or they're wearing an outfit where you can't put a radio mic on them, and if it's a wide shot that's distant, you can't put a boom mic in there because it'll be in the scene. So sometimes you have to just record their voice on the set almost as a reference track. And then, whether it's for technical reasons or because we can't get a good mic on them or there's too much noise, we do go in and we do what's called ADR. And that's an old term that has stuck with it. The term stands for automated dialogue replacement. And we show them the scene. So what happens is an ADR supervisor will go in, they'll look at the time code number on the picture where their voice starts. If somebody says, I'm going to the store. So we'll find, okay, that number is at 1 hour, 1 minute, 27 seconds, 13 frames. And you'll actually type that number in, you'll write the line down. Then when they go to the stage, we have these beeps that'll go beep, 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 and on the fourth imaginary beep, you don't hear it because it would be on the recording, then you hear them say the line. So it would be beep, 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 I went to the store. And so we just sometimes we'll have to record whole scenes, or in some cases whole movies even, of ADR. And the hard part about doing that is that you have to not just get the line, the correct wording, and you don't have to just get it in sync, but the harder part is you have to get them at the right pitch, whether it's up here or it's down here, so it'll match with the production, but you also have to get the correct emotion, and the actor quite often will have to get back in character, which sometimes they do, sometimes they can't do, depending on who the actor is. So it's a challenge. So as a result, a lot of directors don't like to use ADR because quite often they've been burned and they think they have a good ADR recording, and then they play it in the mix and they realize, oh, this doesn't match, or the mood's not right, or there's not enough force behind the line. So, but yes, I'm giving you a long-winded answer to say, yes, we do record those voices. And animated films, for example, are all ADR because all those voices have to be recorded.
Wow.
Yeah, I would assume that it's really hard to recreate that same voice that you did in the video. And because when I filmed in high school and we tried to do voiceovers, the sound came out so terrible and it just didn't come out as crisp and clear. And then when we re-recorded it when we did voiceovers, it would turn out to be very fake. it sounded very artificial. So it was really hard to, you know, get like a match, like a blend of both, like clear but not artificial.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, and sometimes we have that problem. Sometimes we will have to, I mean, I just worked on a film recently, I won't say which one, because I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but where...
Darn.
Yeah, but the person who was recording, they call him the ADR mixer, just didn't get a good sounding recording. It just didn't match with production. It was somebody driving in a car, and cars are hard because cars have the interior of a car has a certain sound. And this was an older car. It was a Toyota Land Cruiser, which is mostly metal and glass. There's not really much padding in there, so it had a certain sound. So what we had to do is actually kind of put together this little space around the actor. We had to put some plexiglass next to them and some metal next to them and something over their head, and we got it to sound more like the interior of a car. And the mixer the original mixer didn't think about that, whereas I worked with the other mixer and he thought about it, and we worked it out and got it to match better. But sometimes it doesn't match, and sometimes you don't have a good microphone, or the microphone's not in the right place, or the room you're recording it in isn't the right kind of room. It may be too reverberant or too dead sounding, or the mic. Quite often people record it with the mic too close. That's a mistake people make quite often. Mm-hmm. But don't feel bad, because it's hard. And we also, when we're mixing, we add back some of the ambience of the room. We use reverb programs to kind of add that sound back to make it sound a little bit more live and not so dead. Another long answer.
It's all good. Don't worry about it, Mr. Scott. I know Kendall also had a question for you.
Yes. So since you're working in the movie industry, I'm assuming that there are tons of different parts of production that you have to work with, you know, sound, set, actors, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, have you faced any adversity on your journey to becoming successful, or like adversity with people that you're working with or anything like that?
Oh, lots. But I could say that. But I think, you know, anybody does in this business. First off, you know, this is the kind of business where if you get into it and you get a good job, you're essentially making the same kind of money that, you know, a low-level or a mid-level lawyer makes. And you can get into this business with little more than a high school education. But the problem is the people who do get in and have high school educations are really insecure, I have found. And that's why it's actually good to go through and do your full education and college. And it really prepares you for dealing with problems and adversity. But because it's a situation where people are kind of afraid for their jobs, because there are some people who are in jobs and sometimes they're not qualified to do it, but maybe they've talked their way into it, or they have friends who've gotten them jobs. And so I'm always careful not to be too threatening, to people. So by threatening, I don't mean I'm not going to be a black man or something. But what I'm saying is that I don't, how can I put this? You know, I work to make people comfortable. And I learned that over time, because it used to be when I would start out, I would just say, well, there's a problem. So the answer to the problem is blah, 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 and I'd give them the answer. And the person whose job it was to give the answer was now threatened, because they realize I know more than they do, and the last thing they want is me on their project. So what I learned to do, for example, there was one person in particular who's an executive at a studio, and this guy is, I really don't have a lot of respect for this guy, and I won't say his name, but he's just not an intelligent guy, and it's hard to work with people.
No.
But what I learned was that what I would say is I'd go and I'd say, you know, I'll call him Bob. His name isn't Bob. I'd say, Bob, you know, I have this problem. And I'd tell him the problem, and I'd give him two solutions. One was the right answer, and the other one was not so good an answer, but I needed him to okay, you know, the funds for me to do that. Say, you know, we can either go this route, or, you know, I can hire another person and we can do this and we can do it quicker, but it's going to cost more. And, you know, I don't know if we really need to do it that fast, but, you know, what do you think? They'll say, no, you should take more time and do this and this, and, you know, it'll cost us less. I'll get you some more money, but don't spend that large amount. I'll say, you know what, that's a great idea. And, you know, go ahead and do it that way. And it would make him feel good. So, you know, but I'm not really answering your question fully. As far as adversity, I would say yes. I mean, as an African American, there's probably things that have happened or not happened as a result of me being an African American I'm not even aware of. Sometimes, you know, I'll be up for a show and occasionally, I don't get a show and somebody will get it who's less qualified. And there can be all kinds of reasons. It can be because they perceive that the person will work better with somebody else, or they can, you know, it's any number of things, because this business is really personality driven. It's, you know, your ability is important, but it's also people are always looking at how well are you going to fit in with a certain group. And so, you know, sometimes you never know what it is, but I tend to, when something doesn't go the way I think it should, or there's some guy who's not as good as me who gets a job, I just tell myself, well, look, this is their loss. You know, they would have, this project would have turned out better if they'd been working with me. But, you know, it's their loss, and, you know, God bless them. Hopefully it works out. And I've even had cases where somebody, in the case of that guy I was telling you about, the studio exec, he actually stabbed me in the back one time. There was a show that I'd finished one show, and I was going to do another show, and had talked to the star, who was also a producer, and he said, sure, if the studio okays it, I'd love to work with you. And this guy wanted to work on the show, even though he was an executive at the studio. It was a weird thing, because usually they wouldn't do my kind of job. They'd be busy doing other jobs, but he wanted to work on it. He wanted to kind of prove his wealth, because his worth to the studio, because he was having some problems there politically. So anyway, so he told some people at the studio that I wasn't qualified, so forth and so on. I didn't get the show, but later on he asked me for some sound effects that I had, because it was with an African-American cast and he needed some recordings, and I happened to have some of people's voices, like at a party and that sort of thing. And he didn't know that I knew that he had stabbed me in the back, but when he asked, I said, yeah, sure, you know, I let him have them. And now, I could have told him off, and that's what a lot of people would do. And in my younger years, that's what I would have done. I would have told him off. But what ended up happening is this dude ended up coming back to me later on and, you know, saying, well, I really appreciate that, and I have this other show that I can't do. Could you do this? And I said, yeah, sure. So I ended up, in the course of my career, I've probably gotten maybe four shows from this guy. So, you know, it paid off. And the thing about this business is, you know, regardless as to whether you go through adversity, you just – one thing you cannot do, especially as a minority, and I'm assuming most of you are, is that you can't tell people off. It's sometimes you want people to know how you feel, or if you, you know, realize that they've messed you over, you want to say, aha, I know it, and here's why, and then you tell them about it, and you want them to feel bad. But really, it's just going to come back on you. The way I deal with adverse situations like that is I just file that information away. And I say, okay, this person's a snake, I know that. So when I'm talking to them and they say, oh, I guarantee you such and such, I realize, well, it's not a guarantee, and don't believe them. And, you know who you can trust and who you can't trust. So as far as adverse things, some, you know, there have been some things that have happened, and, you know, some people have done some underhanded things. I could really tell you a couple of bad stories about, you know, people sabotaging my work and stuff. But
teams,
you know,
will do that too. You know,
yeah,
it starts,
yeah,
from... Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, some of it has just been, you know, people trying to get ahead, and some has been racially motivated. But, you know, most of the people that I've met in this business have been really good people, I've got to say. I'd say the majority of them. A surprising number of people, actually. So, you know, I just tend to not let the haters, you know, get me down, because there's always other work. And what I concentrate on when something goes wrong is just getting better at my craft. And so I know I'm always going to get hired, and people are always going to like my work because I'm good at what I do.
Hmm. Now, Star has been pretty quiet this show. I was wondering if our regular host has any questions.
You've been doing a great job as a teen host.
This
is their first time. So... She did a
good
job.
Do you have
job.
Any questions, Star?
Well,
yeah,
of course.
Ask a question.
Yes, of course. I have plenty of questions. That's why I have Teen Station. We always talk about goal-oriented and having goals and setting up different stages and as you enter different phases into your life. So when you're younger to now, did you set up goals for yourself And then do you continue to set up new goals for you, for yourself as you continue?
Yeah, I think I did. You know, the way I would work is I don't think I had a complete arc set out for myself. I didn't think I'm starting here. When I finish, I want to be here. But what I would do is I would set a goal of, for example, when I was at National Public Radio in D.C., I said, you know what, I want to get into films and I want to work in sound and films. And I was able to get the job at Lucasfilm. Once there, I realized I want to mix. I want to be a mixer. So I came down to L.A., and the first job I got was at an independent place on the Universal lot, and I ended up being a mixer. And I did some of that, and I did some at Sony. And then, so I've transitioned from one thing to another. Once I get to a certain plateau, I'll look around and say, okay, what's the next thing I want to do? And I'll kind of work towards that. And there have been times let me back up. When I started mixing, I thought, that's what I want to do for my career. I want to be a mixer, and that's what I want to do. And once I got there, I realized that, you know, there were certain aspects of it that I didn't like. The fact that when you're mixing, you're stuck in the room, you can barely get up to go to the bathroom because the clients complain, where did he go? So, you know, I realized, okay, then, you know, what I want to do is I want to supervise. And I was able to start editing, and then I supervised. And now, as a supervisor, my goals are just to work on different types of movies. I wanted to work on some horror movies. I got to work on this one. I think I'm going to work on another one. But my goal right now in my career is to work on more action movies. I've done some, but I want to do more of them because part of the reason is they're a heck of a lot of fun to work on because, you know, I love doing explosions and chase scenes and that sort of thing. And
a
also,
true man.
Well, thank you. But you know what? I have an assistant, an apprentice, actually, who's in the next room, who just got out of college, and I'm teaching her a lot. She just loves action movies. And I just told her, hey, I'm working on this. I just got this other movie. It's actually kind of a romantic thing. And she said, does anybody die? I said, no. Are there any guns? No. So she's really into that. But it is generally a man thing, and most of the sound effects editors who work on action movies are guys, for the most part, but not all, because I think there's some kind of male-driven thing that makes us go that route. But anyway, that's what I want to do right now is work towards that. Because another thing about them, the action movies tend to have the bigger budgets also, and, you know, homie wants to get paid.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's true. It's the truth. And for especially our teens here, they are about to enter the phase of college. Miranda's still in high school. Kendall's in the college interviewing stage. We have Sashine and Ashley, freshmen in college. So
sophomore.
Not really sophomores, not really
okay.
Showing
and,
what
and, Kendall, you're interviewing for college?
Yes, I'm going to be a freshman in college next year. So my applications are in, and now I've had a lot of interviews.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, my daughter just went through that, actually. She's going to be a freshman next year as well.
Yeah, so they're all at the pivotal stage, not really knowing what they may want to do, having an idea what they're passionate about. How should they go about creating their path towards what they want to do?
Well, I mean, the obvious thing is to figure out the direction, if you can, that you figure out what you want to do when you get out of school. And sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you have to get into college to figure it out. I mean, I didn't know when I got into college that I was going to be in sound, but my first day I ended up at the radio station, and that kind of solidified it. So, you know, get your feet wet as soon as you can, figure out what you want to do, and work towards that, obviously. The other thing is from the business I'm in, the film business, you know, I majored in radio, TV, and film and minored in business. And when I look back on it, it may have been better if I had minored in radio, TV, and film and majored in business. But the main thing is to intern as much as you can in the field that you like, because you're going to learn more from your internships than you ever will in the classroom. You know, the hands-on stuff will take you far. Just like this person I'm mentoring, in the first month, I had taught her more than she learned in all four years of her school about sound, and much more than she ever would have learned, just because actually sitting down and doing it at a facility, you're going to learn more. So I'd say definitely concentrate on interning. And don't waste your internship. In other words, if you can get an internship where you're working under somebody or next to somebody who's doing what you want to do, definitely do that, as opposed to interning at something that doesn't really relate to what your major is or what you want to do when you get out.
That's certainly true.
Yeah.
And what word of advice that you've received would you say, can you tell us, would be the best advice that you were given?
I think probably the best one would be, and I don't remember who told me this, but just always bring your A game. In other words, whenever you're working on a project, if it's your project at school, you know, just the first project they get you to the last thing you do, just always do the absolute best that you can do. And that really got ingrained into me. And part of that was my dad telling me that, always do your best, always do your best. Then somebody else said, always bring your A game. And now I'm stuck with it. I mean, my desk at home may be a little messy, but at work everything is organized. I mean, to the point where I may be a little obsessive about it, but, you know, I'm always trying to make everything I do a little bit better. And as a result, just like I was saying before, I'm always getting better with each project that I do, and I'm learning more and learning new synthesizers, new programs. And as a result, I still love what I do. I mean, I love coming to work every day and turning on the computer and trying to do something and make something out of nothing. So just always bring your A game.
That's certainly true.
That's wonderful advice.
Ashley, you did a great job as a teen host.
Thank you. I had one more question, though, before
I take down
the reins of being teen host.
Yeah.
Just for our audience, I mean, we're hearing you work with a lot of high-profile movies. I'm sure everyone wants to know, who are some of the biggest stars you've worked with, if you ever got to meet the celebrities?
I do from time to time, especially when I record my own ADR for shows. So, but usually I hire somebody to do that. But I've met a lot of people. Let me see. Like I said, Wesley Snipes, worked with him. Michael Douglas, Janet Jackson.
Names
escape. a lot of people. Ben Stiller, met his dad, Jerry Stiller.
I love Ben Stiller.
Did
you get to meet Jennifer Lawrence when you did Hunger Games?
No, I didn't, because I didn't do the ADR. And there are a lot of times where I could go to the ADR stage and meet them, but I'm just busy doing something. Oh, Cedric the Entertainer, Queen Latifah. Terrence Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Just met Robert Downey Jr. in passing, just on the lot one day.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's funny because he had done that show where he was in blackface. And I know he was getting a lot of heat for it, so when he saw me, he was kind of looking at me a little sheepishly, because I guess he was getting a hard time. So I just lifted my left fist up, and I said, right on, my brother. And he just busted out laughing. I think it made him feel better, and we talked a little bit.
That's
you know.
So good. He broke the ice. That's
yeah,
really
broke
cool.
the ice, yeah. It's all about doing that. And one thing I will say is, with this business, whether it's film or video or anything, it's a relationship-driven business. So the thing you want to do is make new relationships, meet people. You've got to learn how to just, even though I'm basically a shy person by nature, I've learned over time how to just, you know, when I see somebody, just be able to go over and walk up to them and start a conversation. And you have to do that. You can't wait for them to come to you. So you have to learn
that
how to
is, yes, that is yeah. just such sound advice, pun intended.
Yeah.
So for our closing thoughts, I just wanted to ask everybody, just really briefly, what did you get out of Mr. Hedgepath's valuable time and just his wonderful insight into the business? I'll start with myself, just so you guys get what I'm asking. I think I got a lot of things confirmed. Considering I'm a high school student, I already knew the importance of internships. I knew the importance of forging relationships. But it's really nice because when you're a college student, you can tend to feel like a burden when you ask questions. You can tend to feel like a burden when you, you know, can't keep up some of the time. So it's really nice hearing from the person who, if I was interning under you, I'd have to really listen to what you're saying. It's really good to hear from you, like, no, do it. Get out there. Make relationships. Always be a standout because you never know what project you're going to be asked to do. And for me, that was really, you know, it made me feel good knowing that I'm on the right track right now because I'm doing a lot of internships myself.
But
so
also, don't be afraid
that.
To ask questions. I mean, that's okay. You know, if you find somebody who's willing to tell you stuff, they'll be willing to take your questions.
Okay. Thank you. How about you, Miranda, who is our youngest here?
For me, I guess just more about the process of sound editing. I think that it's probably overlooked by a lot of people because when it's done well, I mean, you shouldn't even notice it because it just blends in really well. But just definitely appreciating it more.
Good.
That's wonderful. How about you, Kendall?
Oftentimes, like, you hear, you know, college admissions people or, you know, your parents telling you it's important, which things are important, but you don't really see how they can affect you when you, like, become successful or how, like, your past experiences with, you know, networking and internships have affected a person. So definitely through your experiences, it kind of sets an example. And also, I just really love movies, so I always, you know, think it's so easy to just, you know, put a movie together, and I never, like, think of the process behind it.
Yeah, it's hard.
This definitely gave me a different perspective and, you know, more respect for the people behind the scenes.
Yeah.
It's like building your own jigsaw puzzle.
How about you, Tassine?
I always knew that it's really hard to, you know, create the perfect sound. There's so much nitpicking to do, but hearing from you how much work it takes, how much there's so many elements to it. I really learned a lot from it and I took away from it. And I didn't realize how much racial, like, prejudice happens at the workforce in your job. I didn't realize people were so judgmental, but...
Well, it can be, but it may not be racial. It may just be because they're threatened for their job. There's just no way of knowing. And one thing I'd say is whatever happens, don't worry about it, because if you worry about whether it's racial or not, it'll just drive you nuts.
Right. True.
So true. And so just as a closing, through radio here on Teen Station, it's really our goal to have an enhanced interactive experience through a conversation. And Mr. Hedgepath, you're able to illustrate that exact experience through sound by your description and your stories. We greatly enjoyed it, and it was definitely a memorable experience.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to all of you, and I can just tell by your questions and your drive that you're all going to do well.
Thank you.
So,
yeah, that was our show. We had Greg. Everyone give a little round of applause. Woo!
Okay, wonderful.
So
thank you, of course, for listening, audience, to Teen Station here on Blake Radio Rainbow Soul, where you can engage in the perspective of all and the opinion of many. This is our untapped truth, so what do you have to say? Have a great night, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.